Opening day is 2 weeks away, and don't look now, but our Toronto Blue Jays are on fire. Let's get into it. Good evening, everybody. It is Thursday, March 13th, and welcome to episode 238 of Buds and Blue Jays. I'm Jesse Burrell, not joined by my usual co-host, Jesse Tricio, as he is on vacation this week and spending the time with his family out on March break as he gears up for a good long season. So we are calling up our friend David Fulton back from the minor leagues to join us on today's show. Dave, always great to have you on our show. Welcome back. How have you been, my guy?
Pleasure to be here. You know, I love coming in to chop it up with you guys. I've been good. It's been nice to get some warm weather going here. It's nice to have strung a couple of nice days together. And with the spring training baseball on the TV, I'm gearing up. I'm feeling it.
Starting to feel like spring is here. The birds are chirping a little bit. It's all coming together. We are excited. No more doing these episodes while staring at snowstorms and minus 40 outside on the window. So we are happy about that. Today on the episode, we are going to take a look at some of the biggest X factors for the Toronto Blue Jays this year. Who are the players that, if they come out and perform, can make or break this team and get the Blue Jays to that spot we want to be in the promised land? We will dive into all of those. Plus, we're going to take a look at some notes from spring training, including what in the world is going on with Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s contract demands? Why can't they come up with a deal? What is going on with Eric Swanson, and are we going to get anything from him this year? Update on Max Scherzer's thumb and so much more in this episode. But first, before we get started, guys, please like the video, subscribe to the channel, leave us a 5-star review on all of those podcast platform avenues. It really is the best way to help the show grow. And if you are new here, if you are just joining us, as we get into the regular season, it's going to be a little bit of a mix-up. We switch to 2 episodes a week, one after each series, where we do about 30-minute series recaps. And the format's a little different than what you might have gotten used to this offseason. So stick with us as we get through the season. All right. Housekeeping done, Dave. Are you ready to get into this?
I'm so ready. Let's do it.
I think we just dive straight into the main topic and we start going with, give me your biggest X factor for the 2024 Toronto Blue, or 2025 Toronto Blue Jays season.
Well, I thought about this a lot, and there's a lot of guys that I think that could fall under this. Like, obviously, you know, the last time I was on here, we did a lot of speculating about, you know, who's going to be here, who's not going to be here, what are we expecting out of people that are sticking around. I talked a lot about maybe that's part of the plan from the front office, is that they're expecting some of these guys internally to take a step forward. So honestly, I think the biggest X factor for me, at least as far as hitters is concerned, is Aurelvis Martinez.
Okay, we'll start there. Go on.
So he is a guy that I feel like can be a big difference maker because of the fact that the Jays have really been struggling to generate offense over the last couple of seasons, specifically last year. They had some very notable struggles to push guys across the plate. And yep. Aurelvis Martinez has hit, if I'm not mistaken, the second most home runs in the minor leagues over the last two seasons, and he missed half the year. So that's a guy that I'm looking at and saying, okay, if this guy can make the leap, which, you know, it's tough to break into the majors, but if he can get in there and earn himself a spot and continue to produce in the same kind of way in the majors that he has in the minors, that's a huge impact bat for them, I think.
What does the upside look like for Aurelvis Martinez? Because in these X Factors thing, it's got to be this guy clicks, this guy booms, this guy really becomes a high impact player. So what does that look like on the field to you, Dave?
That's a tough one to gauge. I mean, as for Martinez, obviously the upside is the offense. I don't, his defense has been okay. Like, I wouldn't say that it's like incredible, but I don't think it's been a net negative either, at least from what I've seen and from what I've read. But when you look at the stats that he's been putting up, from at least 2021 onward, but especially in the last kind of year to year and a half, I mean, he's in top percentile for hard hit rate. He's in top percentile for barrel rate. it's the sort of power that we've been begging for anyone to have outside of Vlad, really. They've been looking for impact bats ever since they pivoted away from the let's all hit home run strategy that they had going on a couple of years back. They're like, no, we can't. That's not sustainable. We can't do that. We have to be defense first. And then all of a sudden the offense dried up because they went too far in the other direction. That's the, it's went from one wild overcorrection to the other side. Right. So if he can come in and 20 home runs, 25, that's a huge addition. That's a huge addition of power that we just don't have coming from a lot of other places in the lineup or haven't in the past, at the very least. So rather than it being a true five tool kind of impact, I think it's really just more about the bat.
So Dave, then if all things do go well and Aroldis Martinez finds a way for continued playing time and he does become that lefty masher that we think he could be, who ends up hitting more home runs? Like, I don't think he's going to get up to the Vlad or Santander levels of home.
Probably not. No, I would say I could see a scenario where it goes Vlad, Santander, and then Martinez. Like if he plays a significant number of games, like if he can carve out a role right away coming out of camp or in the early goings of, you know, May, somewhere in there. So he can play an appreciable amount of the season with the team. I think he has a real shot of being the third guy in the home run ranking. Like I could see him doing 20 to 25. That's kind of where I would see him at.
So who hits more home runs this year then, Bo Bichette or Aroldis Martinez?
That's a tough one. Honestly, I feel like they're going to be kind of like neck and neck. Like if Martinez has the kind of impact that we're hoping he has and that it's looking like he's projecting he might be able to bring to the major leagues, I would expect that would be comparable to Bichette. Like, I don't expect Bichette to be like mashing a million home runs either. I would have probably, if you'd asked me, pegged him in somewhere in the 20 to 30 range, maybe, as long as he's bouncing.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, as long as he's bouncing back in the way that we're kind of hoping that he will.
What about Dalton Varsho then? How many home runs does he get? Is he above those or below those?
That's a really interesting question because he's looked really good so far this year. Like last I looked, I think he was batting over 300 and was still playing very excellent defense like you'd expect them to. So that's a really good question. That's a really, really good question. If he can keep up this offensive momentum and turn it into a really, you know, solid front to back campaign for him, he's in that conversation too. He really is, especially with some of the places that the Jays play all the time with, you know, short porches and left, right? Or sorry, and right, excuse me. That's catered. If he can find that swing again where he can, you know, hook some around the pesky pole or puts them into, you know, the right field bleachers in Yankee Stadium, he's absolutely capable of being right in that same thing. I wouldn't peg him any higher than 30, but I could absolutely see him putting 25 out this year.
Okay, I like that. And when the Blue Jays signed Anthony Santander, we thought, okay, we finally got our cleanup hitter. I think we've mentioned before, the Blue Jays were the second worst team in baseball in getting home runs from their cleanup spot last year. So the thought was Santander will fill that. But now if the John Schneider reports are true and he's going to be hitting top three in the lineup, then we still don't have a cleanup hitter. So maybe if Aroldis Martinez can click here, can become that cleanup hitter. Dave, does he make the opening day roster, Aroldis Martinez?
I think probably not, given the circumstance of how last season went for him. I think there's going to be some additional time in the minor leagues. I mean, taking into account the fact that he lost half a season owing to the situation. So I would expect him to probably start in AAA. Which is where he left off last year, apart from his very brief stint with the Jays. But if his, like I say, if his numbers look really good coming out of April and into May, that's kind of when I would expect to see, okay, if someone in the infield is starting to, is having a rough start or is starting to lag a little bit after a hot start or something like that, that's a circumstance where I could see it's like, okay, well, this kid's clearly ready, potentially. Let's see what he's got. We didn't get a really good look at him last year, so let's turn him loose in the early part of the season and see what he's got.
Okay, Dave, I love that call. I think he is competing. As I said last episode, he's competing with Davis Schneider, and Davis Schneider's had a really good spring, so I think they're going to give Davis Schneider the run there to go on with that and right on Aroldis Martinez. I'm a fan of his, too. It should be all systems go going forward for him. I want to start with my biggest X factor, and you can't talk about the Toronto Blue Jays and the future of this team without talking about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Now, we'll get to the contract stuff later in this episode here, but I want to talk specifically about the player that is on the field and what we might get from him, because we all know the roller coaster of seasons that we've had so far from Vladimir Guerrero Jr. have been interesting. We've had the MVP runner-up season, and we had last year where he was fantastic. And then we've kind of just had those good but not great seasons from Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in the past. Mm-hmm. I think if you want to, if this is true for any team in baseball, but your team will go as far as your best players take you. And Vladimir Guerrero Jr., without a doubt, is the Blue Jays' best player. So if the Blue Jays are going to have any chance of making a run, getting in this division, maybe sneaking into a wild card spot, and maybe making any run in the postseason at all, then Vladdy Guerrero Jr. needs to be the MVP level caliber bat. We know he can be. So he is by far my biggest X factor for the 2024 or 2025 season.
Big time. Yeah, I totally agree with you there. It's one that you don't think about, you know, when we have these kinds of discussions, there is a tendency to kind of analyze the guys that are coming in on the fringes or coming up from the minors or who are, you know, question mark free agent signings. But yeah, we absolutely, Vlad is the captain of this ship and the team will go as he goes. So if he has another season like he did last year, we're looking pretty good probably. But if it's a situation like between, you know, the MVP season and what we got last year, those kind of couple of weird years in the middle where he just didn't seem to have it, that's not a great sign. So yeah, absolutely.
And we need him to stay healthy too on the field. He's been that mostly. He really has only missed a handful of games over the course of his big career so far, but the Jays really do need to stay as healthy as he does enter a contract year. Worth noting, we have seen some players perform in a contract year. Dave, I want to get the OPS plus last year. So how much, or why don't we just do straight OPS? It was 940 last season after 788 and 818 the year before that. Where does Vlad's OPS finish in 2025?
I do think that this is as much of an excellent, excellent player as he is, one that can drive kind of the boat by himself to a lesser or greater extent in a lot of cases. I do think that having other people around him that are also credible threats will unlock an additional level for him as well. Not to suggest that the guys on the roster last year were not that, but it was definitely Vlad and everyone else as far as the hitters were concerned, right? So if Santander comes as advertised and we get some bounce back seasons from some guys that have shown some big offensive pop in the past, or we have a guy like Aurelvis to come up from the minors and start smacking him right away, that just makes Vlad that much more deadly, right? Because it's like, okay, well, if Santander is mashing and whoever else is in front of Vlad is mashing, what do you do? Who do you want to pitch to, right? That's what makes the best team so successful, is when it's like, okay, we take a pass on this guy and we roll the dice with a different guy who's equally as dangerous or very close to the same level of danger, right? So I would say closer to 900 if we don't have that kind of dynamic in the lineup. But if we can figure out the dynamic with how the lineup's going to be set out and we have guys performing up to expectations, I wouldn't be shocked if he was close to 1,000. I really wouldn't. We know he has the capability. We know he can do that. So if we can get a couple of other like deadly guys in the lineup, guys that are consistently performing all year long, that's just gonna, I think, unlock a new level for Vlad, and he's gonna look like MVP form again.
God, I hope so. And that'll go a long way for this Toronto Blue Jays team to reach their upside if Vladdy is indeed the one who is doing all this work and doing all this damage. I just want to see some more more bats and more home runs, like big flies from Vladimir Guerrero Jr. this year. And if this spring training is anything to do with it, he's well on his way. Dave, he hit a ball 117.2 miles per hour today. Ground ball single that just went through. And then he hit a double that was only a mere 110. So good game for Vlad. He's mashing. And he seems to be locked in by all accounts. So it's a good thing for our Toronto Blue Jays. All right, Dave, let's keep it rolling. Let's give us your next big X factor for the Toronto Blue Jays this year.
All right. Well, I was when we talked about this beforehand, I was kind of rolling it around in my head and saying, okay, well, you know, who's going to be I tried to come up with one from each of the three kind of distinct aspects of the roster, one starter and one reliever or potential swing guy. And so I think for my starter pick is kind of how I organized it in my head is probably Bowden Francis. Again, you know what we're expecting out of the veterans. We all expect them to be as good as they were last year, or in the cases of the guys that slumped a little bit, to have a bounce back. Obviously, it sucks that Scherzer's already dealing with the thumb issue, but hopefully that's not a long-term sort of nagging sort of thing for him. So that kind of leaves me with, okay, who's the fifth person in this equation? And it's Bowden Francis. So I think he has the absolute ability here to pick up where he left off last year. I mean, he had excellent, excellent momentum down the second half of the season. And if he can recapture that form and continue that momentum, he has the chance of making a real, real difference for this pitching staff, especially if the rest of the veteran guys that are on the staff are able to kind of continue at form or return to form. And Bowden Francis is able to kind of continue to perform at the level we saw him last year. That's a really good rotation. You have four veteran guys that are performing the way you expect, and then you have this fifth guy who came out of nowhere and is just pitching absolutely lights out. That's the makings of a really, really good rotation again. So, and then on the flip side of that, if we don't get that out of him, then it becomes the big question mark again, like the same thing that we had in years past, where it's like, okay, well, who's the fifth starter on this rotation, right? Is it going to be Alek Manoah? Is it going to be Yariel Rodriguez? Is it going to be some other guy that we're going to have to go out and pick up now? That's the real question mark. So I'm hoping that it's the former rather than the latter, that Bowden is able to pick up where he left off and solidify his place in the top five and leave no question about it.
Yeah, so here's what we know about Bowden Francis in his career. We've talked a lot about his run in the second half last year where he was doing those near no-hitters where he looked absolutely dominant, one of the best like five-start stretches in Major League history that he went on. But we also know the Bowden Francis who made the opening day rotation out of camp last year as well and made two starts and was demoted quickly. Do you take anything out of the fact that Bowden Francis is one of the few Blue Jays pitchers who's actually having a pretty rough spring right now? Does this matter to you at all?
Yes and no. I mean, obviously, we try not to read too much into it because, I mean, we see weird stories and storylines come out of spring training every year. Like every season, there's one guy who's absolutely screaming hot in spring training. And then as soon as the season opens, he's like a dumpster fire and vice versa. There have been plenty of guys that looked horrific in spring training. And then as soon as the season got going and they started, you know, they get into the regularity of the schedule and they know that they're not worried about am I going to make the roster or anything like that, and then it's like, okay, now I'm clicking on all cylinders. So I don't put too much stock in the fact that he's not looking 100% in spring training so far, because I feel like once training camp is over and it's, you know, I've made the roster, then you kind of get into that pattern. It's like, okay, let's just focus on get into this rhythm, get into this routine, and we'll figure it out from there.
I think there was one year Zach Greinke just tried to hit every single, he tried to throw a pitch every single mile per hour between like 65 and 95. And that was his goal for his start in spring training. So who knows, Bowden Francis could be working on something. His job is not in jeopardy. And this is the first time ever for Bowden Francis that he wasn't trying to make a team out of camp, that he knows his spot is secure. So maybe there's something to do that as well. Worth monitoring for sure for Bowden Francis. I'll stick with the starting rotation here, Dave. And I'm going to go Chris Bassitt. Who, and let's be honest here, all five of these starting pitchers could have been your X factors here on this episode. They've all are going to be so key in order to making the Blue Jays go with success. But I want to single out Chris Bassitt specifically, one for a few things. he kind of did take a step back last season towards the end of his season. The walks kind of got out of hand a little bit. We saw a lot more blow-up starts from Chris Bassitt than we've seen in the past. A lot of times where his pitch count would get elevated early, he had to be pulled. He mentioned a few times, too, that the fact the offense wasn't scoring any runs for him did struggle with him because he was making more competitive pitches. Is that just an excuse? I do not know. And Chris Bassitt, too, historically, has also been quite a low, slow starter as well. Mm-hmm. Like last season and his first year here in Toronto, his month of April was not very good. The month of April for the Toronto Blue Jays this year is a lot of good teams. I think only the Washington Nationals are the only team we played this first month of the year that did not finish above 500 last season or 500 or better last season. So it's very important we get out to a big start. And Chris Bassitt is going to be relied on to throwing a lot of these innings. For what it's worth, the Commanders look sharp this spring. So do with that information what you will. There's been talk about him maybe cutting down from this 7-8 pitch mix to maybe going to only four. We'll see how that works. It'll be interesting to play. But getting a good, successful Chris Bassitt one more time before it falls off a cliff will be big for this Toronto Blue Jays.
Absolutely. I agree with your assessment 100%. And to your point, if he is cutting down the pitch mix a little bit, that's very much in line with what we see in a lot of cases with guys that are moving towards the end of their career. The pitching coaches are like, okay, clearly you have diminished stuff, so let's just focus on what is really, really still effective and not worry about the rest of the fluff. So if he's taking a more concentrated approach to his pitch mix, that ultimately might be to his benefit. Does it make him easier to read? Maybe. But if you're focusing on making the best pitches and not worrying so much about what those pitches are, I think there is something to that in terms of, like the old saying is, just worry about filling the zone. Stop worrying about you can't worry about which pitch you're going to throw. You just need to make good pitches.
Yeah, and I think him trusting in Alejandro Kirk will go a long way. I remember earlier we would see Chris Bassitt out there calling his own pitches. I don't think he's done that yet this spring. I think he's letting Alejandro Kirk kind of take charge there for him, and I think that'll be really good as well for Bassitt. What was the point I wanted to make? I had something. I lost it. It'll come back to me, I'm sure, but it was interesting stuff on Chris. Yes. Where do you stand on the decision to throw more pitches or less pitches? Because in theory, if you're only throwing, say, three pitches, you can really master those three pitches, right? Mm-hmm. But if you are an eight pitch guy, even though they might not be the most effective, if you're unpredictable and the batters don't know they're coming, then it's a lot harder to hit. So where have you kind of stood on that range? There's some people who like one versus the other.
I mean, from my personal opinion, I feel like it's kind of a spectrum, and it really is subjective to who the pitcher is. Because for every Yu Darvish, there's like 100 other guys that would love to be Yu Darvish, but can't pull that off. Like,
right.
He's a guy who genuinely can throw very well all of the pitches that he has. And he claimed, what was the last time he claimed? Like he had 11 or 12 different pitches, something like that. So, but you believe that because he's been able to demonstrate the ability to throw a crazy number of pitches very well. And then on the flip side of that, you have guys like it's a reliever, so it's a slightly different scenario. But Mariano Rivera, like he only threw a cutter, like that was it.
Yeah, he was so coming too.
But he was so incredibly good with his placement and his deception that that was all he needed, right? So I tend to kind of fall somewhere in the middle where I definitely think that a concentrated number of pitches is usually better for a reliever because you're not going to be in the game for very long. So just focus on what is really what makes you effective. Whereas with the starting pitchers, I think a slightly more than that is probably the best. But again, we've seen it before where a veteran pitcher is coming towards the tail end of their career and they're starting to lose their command a little bit. They're starting to lose the velocity a little bit. And the pitching coaches in a lot of cases are saying, okay, well, let's just worry about what you still have and trying to maximize, get every last bit of juice out of those pitches that are still really working for us.
Yeah, and Chris Bassitt, I know historically, can be sometimes quite stubborn. So getting that message across can be tough. Yeah. And me as well. I have that same problem too. So we'll see how that goes with Chris Bassitt, but definitely something we should pay attention for because him pitching well is definitely going to be a key for the success this season. Well, Dave, I guess we've done a hitter. We've done a starting pitcher. Let's talk bullpen now and give me your bullpen X factor, the guy in the pen that can make a big difference for us this year.
Well, See, I was flip-flopping on this one a little bit because one of the guys isn't necessarily going to be a reliever, question mark. We don't really know what role he's going to play. He could be both. And I'm sure you're probably cluing into that. I'm talking about Yariel Rodriguez.
Of course, yes.
Given that, you know, we could stretch him out to be a 5-6 inning guy, and we could just shorten him up and say you're going to go out for one or two, right? So I was initially going to gravitate towards choosing him because I do genuinely think that he has the ability to be an impact swingman, depending on the circumstance. But given that his role isn't really super clearly defined at this point in time, I didn't think it was – I wanted to go with Bowden for the starter. And the guy that I was thinking about for strictly just a reliever situation was Sandlin. Right. I am intrigued. I don't know if I'm super impressed with him yet, but I've watched some of his pitching and it's like, okay, I definitely see why they went after you. And so it's, I guess I'm scrutinizing him mostly because a lot of the other guys, I'm like, okay, I know what you guys can do. It's a question of will you, right? With Sandlin, he's such a question mark for me because, you know, you don't see a lot. We didn't see a lot of him, or at least I didn't see a lot of him until he came here, right? And right. You hear about, you can read stats on a page and you can hear other people talk about what kind of a pitcher he is. But I've just been fascinated to watch him in the limited number of appearances that we've seen him in spring training. Just to see, like, okay, well, how does this guy operate? What makes him tick? And if he comes as advertised, then I think that he could be a real difference maker in that bullpen. I don't know if he's going to, with the Swanson situation, if he's going to be tasked with doing some of the higher leverage stuff, or if he's going to be more of a let's get us through to the end here sort of thing, like a 6-7-8 kind of guy. But whatever role he ends up, you know, kind of settling into here, I think he has the potential to kind of really tie this together from the long relief guys to the guys that we're anticipating might be towards the back end of that, like to finish games out.
For what it's worth, too, for Nick Sandlin this spring, this was coming into the game today where I believe his pitch, but he's only pitched two innings, so he's gotten two appearances. So
that's what I mean.
He did give up a solo home run, but he does have three strikeouts and only one walk, so those are all things that you will take. Extremely small sample size, and spring training doesn't really matter anyway, but
exactly.
It's worth noting for Nick Sandlin. He'll be on the team. The Blue Jays like him. They like his ability to like have reverse platoon splits, as opposed to use that splitter, and look, the Blue Jays have been adding a lot of splitter guys to them. And when you have Kevin Gausman on your staff, getting these splitter guys would work well. We said the same thing when the Blue Jays traded for Eric Swanson a few years ago, and he put together a good, at least first year here with Toronto as well. So I'm with you on that. A quick mention, because you did bring up Yariel Rodriguez, and I think he is absolutely a big X factor for this team that maybe not many people are talking about, because we know the Blue Jays are going to go through the season with using more than five starters. It's not just going to be those guys. And if you look at the starting pitching depth, I don't think we're going to give Ryan Yarbrough many starts. It might be like a bulk guy. So it's going to be Yariel Rodriguez is the next man up. And if you look down at AAA Buffalo right now, it's like Jake Bloss has not had a good spring, although the velocity looks up, but needs a bit more seasoning down there.
Yeah.
And then you don't have to get that far down that list. Like Adam Macko is hurt. Adam Klopfenstein is slow wrapping up here. It's not long before you get to Andrew Bash and guys like that making starts for your team this year. And if that's happening early for the Blue Jays, that's trouble. I'm kind of comparing what's happening here with Yariel Rodriguez to how the Blue Jays handled Nate Pearson all those years. Different player, because Nate Pearson had the electric fastball and was a top 100 prospect for years. Yariel was not, but it's kind of similar. The Blue Jays always wanted to ride out Nate Pearson as a starter because they thought, well, what if he just turns into Justin Verlander?
Yeah.
Like what if that happens? And I think they're trying to do the same thing here with Yariel Rodriguez. But at some point, if the guy is good and can go to the pen and be a good reliever, like that's not a bad thing to have a very good reliever, you know? Jeff Hoffman was a starter turned into a great reliever. Emmanuel Class A started up as a starter turned into a dominant reliever. I think it might be best that stuff can play up. And for a guy who does deal with command issues sometimes, right, maybe that guy can play a little better in the bullpen than he could in the starting rotation. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with him throughout the course of the season.
Yeah, definitely. I think As to your point, I think deployment is going to be really important here, especially. I honestly wouldn't be shocked, given that Yarbrough is very familiar with playing this kind of role too, that if we get into a situation where it's like, okay, we got to fill a start, or we need to fill a couple of starts here, that you give Yarbrough like three of those innings, four of those innings, and then you give Yariel three or four of those innings. Just try and
soak them up off each other, right?
Exactly. Turn it into a two long relief guys kind of situation. And then if you're in a position where you're ahead in the game, you bring in the guy for the ninth. And if not, then you just bring out, you know, one of your cleanup guys to soak that last inning, and you're through the game, right? So from a deployment standpoint, I think that's going to be really, really critical in terms of what kind of an impact he does have for us.
Makes a lot of sense to me, Dave. I like the way you're thinking. I like the way your head is at there about your bullpen. This next guy, the X-Factor I'm going to bring up here, isn't really my X-Factor, but I just want to make note. I was watching the Blue Jays spring training game this afternoon, and Jimmy Garcia came onto the mound, and I think he threw 11 pitches, got three strikeouts, and just looked like he was toying. I felt bad for some of these Baltimore Orioles prospects who had to come in and face Jimmy Garcia, throwing 98 heaters, spinning those curveballs in there. He threw a couple changeups too that I was like, Jesus, Jimmy, this is just not fair. So I think he is by far going to be probably, aside from Jeff Hoffman, who also looks really good, one of the best just pure middle relievers or setup guys in all of baseball. And if he can just stay healthy and effective, like, sky's the limit, dude. Like, this guy is going to be phenomenal. Ultimate firehouse warehouse guy. So I'm really excited for what's going to come this year for Jimmy Garcia.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we know what we've got in him when we see him at his best. I mean, we've seen it the last, you know, couple of seasons where he's had stretches where he's been our best closer, hands down, or our best reliever, rather, hands down for stretches of the season. So, you know, he can do it. It's just a question of, do we get that Jimmy Garcia for the entire season, or is it this kind of, you know, up and down sort of situation that we've seemed to have seen from him in past, where he'll have an unbelievably dominant stretch and then he'll just fall off the map for a little while and then suddenly find it all over again. So if he can continue to be that level that we saw today and kind of carry that forward. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm thinking about this from you have him and Hoffman waiting at the end of the line. And if your starter only goes five or five and change, you have a guy that you know you can soak in the middle there, like Sandlin or like Pop, who are going to be, you know, by and large, very competent to fill those lower leverage situations. And there's your ball game, right? That's
the recipe. Yeah,
exactly. So I can definitely see where you're going with that. And that has the makings of being like a really nice 1-2 or 1-2-3 going out 6-7-8-9, right? So
I like that. It's a good system, a good way to draw it up. I think John Schneider also likes what you're hearing, if he can just pencil that in to how he wins his ball games every night. We got time for one more each, Dave. So let's go back to the hitting side here. And let's pick one each. I'll go first.
Okay.
And there's a lot of interesting names we can pick up here.
I know.
George Springer being an X factor is absolutely one of them, just because he was so dreadful and we know he could be good. But I'm going to go with Andrés Giménez as my pick here of who can be an X factor for the Toronto Blue Jays. Because if you want to look at a player's floor versus the player's ceiling, and we know what even the floor for Andrés Giménez is probably what he did last year in Cleveland, right? A below average hitter, but he's going to come through. He's going to play great glove defense and whatnot. His spring training numbers have just been okay. I think he's got like a 90 WRC plus. He's been fine. Yeah. But the big thing with him is that the Blue Jays seem to believe in the bat. Like I said this at the time of the trade, you don't make this trade for Andrés Giménez unless you believe that bat can come back to normal. Now, we're not getting the guy that was here 2 years ago in Cleveland, the guy that was like sixth in MVP voting. Nobody is expecting that guy to come here. But if he can just hold his own, think about like what Isaiah Kiner-Falefa did last year for the Toronto Blue Jays, how he went through and he had things. Yep. He had a multi-home run game, by the way. I don't know if you remember that, but last season.
I do remember just that.
Yes. So I think if we could get something like that from Andrés Giménez, plus his defense, plus his speed and all that stuff coming together, I think we could be looking at a very good, solid core piece for this Toronto Blue Jays team, especially too, like when you think about lineup construction and how it's going to line up. Andrés Giménez is probably going to be hitting above Alejandro Kirk, probably going to be hitting above Dalton Varsho. He's going to be a very key part in this lineup. So getting good production from him is going to be very, very important, especially at the plate for the Toronto Blue Jays this season.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm hopeful. I mean, I want to see it before I believe it, obviously, but we know that the potential's in there. So it's just a question of can the hitting coaches and can he bring himself back to, you know, approaching that level at the very least. And I agree with you. I think he's going to be a critical component, kind of like a 5-6 sort of situation. Like, I don't anticipate him being in the top three, top four, but I could definitely see him be the five hitter. Absolutely. So
I think that's likely going to be what happened, depending on what you do with the leadoff spot, depending on where George Springer hits and all that stuff. Like, Andrés Giménez is going to be a very key part of this going into the season. Dave, give me yours. Last one we got here before we touch on some news that came out this spring. But give me your X factor for the Toronto Blue Jays this year.
I mean, it feels a little bit cheap because I feel like he's been getting a lot of ink, but Alan Rodon.
Yeah, let's talk about Alan Rodon for a little bit here.
He's looked really, really good so far this year. And again, you can only put so much stock into spring training results. We all know that. But I mean, what is he? He's batting like over 400 right now, I want to say.
412 right now, yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, even for spring training, that's a little crazy, right? Again, small sample size. But I mean, if you've got, you know, he's got a couple of knocks. The OPS is over 1400 right now.
That's good.
Yeah, I'd say so. So I would not be surprised at all if he does break camp with the team based on what we're seeing right now. I could also very easily see it being a situation like I expected, like I mentioned earlier for Aurelvis, where he does start in AAA, but gets called up very quickly if someone starts to kind of fall off the map a little bit. But if he broke camp with the team, I wouldn't be shocked at all. And I think he has a real chance of being the best rookie on this team based on what I've seen from him so far and based on what we've seen from him in the minors.
Yeah, really impressive stuff from Alan Rodon. When Ross Atkins talked him up at the beginning of camp and then he goes out and does this, like, I don't think you could have expected anything better. Dave, like, I'm just looking at the stats here. You mentioned the OPS. You mentioned the batting average. Two doubles, two home runs as well to go on there. He's been hit by three pitches already, and he's drawn six walks this spring, Dave, including one in the game today, which was a very good at-bat, where all the pitches he was taking were just off the block, and had just finally, I think 2 days ago, struck out for the first time this spring. Yeah. So six walks to one strikeout with the four extra base hits.
Yeah.
Holy, it was really good for Alan Rodon.
That's what I mean. Is it's early returns suggest that it is a full package there. We're seeing the plate discipline be really, really good. He's willing to take a walk. He's not afraid of getting beaned to take a base there. But he's got the power too. I mean, he's got two home runs. He's got the doubles, like you say. It's been kind of a mix of everything for me, and that's why I'm like I liked him before this season, but I really like him now.
Like, I already know what's going to happen. If he might do what you said. He probably won't start the season on the big league team, but he'll probably be that first guy up in AAA, like whenever you need somebody or do a spark. But you already know what's going to happen is John Schneider is going to play George Springer, who's going to be hitting 215. It'll look like he loses a step in the outfield. Alan Rodon's going to be mashing, and you and I are going to be on this show screaming, we're done with George Springer. Get him out of here. Get Alan Rodon up here. And it's just not going to happen. Or they'll call him up, he'll start, and then he'll sit on the bench for 3 days, 4 days, and not get hot. And I can already tell it's going to frustrate the hell out of us this season.
Yeah, that's kind of my, if we want to throw in one teeny tiny extra X factor here is personnel management. Because you and I both know that there were times, I'm sure we had episodes where we talked about it last year. I mean, I was on it, a few of them at the very least, where it's like, what are we doing with the deployment of personnel here? Like, it felt like at points of the season that I was like going crazy. I'm like, the guys that are hitting the best on this team are on the bench for this game. What are we doing? Right. So as long as we don't enter that territory again, fingers crossed, where we have guys who are absolutely going off when they're getting time and then get benched inexplicably, like, then I think we're going to be all right. But I really, that's my worst fear especially for some of the young guys. Because it's better if you can give them a bit of runway, right? Instead of jerking them in and out of the lineup, that doesn't help anybody usually. So if you're going to bring them up, give them a nice stretch of games in a row. Like, don't give them a day off. Don't give them time to rest. You have to, they have to acclimate to what that schedule looks like, to what those, you know, that, that major league pace feels like. Right.
Yeah.
And getting into that rhythm is so key for so many guys. So,
and like, I understand if you're facing a really tough lefty, like Garrett Crochet is coming into town, right?
Sure.
And,
yeah.
And Joey Loperfido is coming off a 2-home-run game. I still think you put Joey Loperfido in that lineup.
Yeah. Right? Absolutely.
He might go through and get a little bloop and understand the metrics say, no, you're probably better off starting Davis Schneider against a Garrett Crochet or something like that. But it's like, I think you got to give it a shot. My theory is, Dave, as we look through like the lineup that the Blue Jays are going to get together, yeah, we still don't know if Bo's going to be like the cleanup man or the leadoff guy. Either way, we know there is kind of a spot available. I think, yeah, we should just have one of those spots just known as the designated hot player spot. So if, sure, Will Wagner's 5 for his last 8, he's your leadoff man tomorrow. If Joey Loperfido is, you know, just coming off that 2-home-run game, he's the leadoff man tomorrow. And you just kind of cycle through a guy in the top of the order,
sure,
who has been putting stuff together, who has been hot, and just see if that can work.
Absolutely.
I know they'll never do that, but I think in theory it makes a lot of sense, and I would love to see the Blue Jays do that.
It does make a lot of sense. I mean, you see that very, very frequently in other sports, right?
Right.
It's like a classic example is hockey when it comes to goaltending, especially. You play whoever's hot. It doesn't matter if you were trying to go, okay, one game is this guy, one game is this guy, to try and load manage a little bit. If a guy is screaming hot, you keep putting him in, right? You do give him time off eventually. Like, you don't run him into the ground. But especially as far as it pertains to baseball, like, you have to give them a stretch. And then once they've played their way out of the lineup, then put someone else in. Don't, like, I was so frustrated last year where I'd look at the box score for a game and it's like, oh, Davis Schneider went 3 for 5. And then the next game he's on the bench. Excuse me? Yeah. No. He got 3 hits yesterday. You need to put him back in the lineup. He's one of the only guys that's going for us right now.
Baseball's a rhythm game. The more pitches they see, the consistency you get, the better these players will be. It's like, it doesn't take much to figure that out, you know? You really should know about that going forward, which I would love to see more of that this season. That's been one of my biggest gripes, actually, with John Schneider at his time at manager, is sometimes you've just got to let these guys do the thing. And I guarantee you we're going to be yelling about it later in this season, probably even as soon as March 29th, for goodness sake, as soon as it goes there. So
yeah, we might very definitely well happen.
All right, Dave, any honorable mentions for an X Factor this year? We don't have to go into detail, but just a name you wanted to throw out there.
I was going to say X Factor. It's not really. Like, I like John Kasavich. I do.
Yeah, prospects, little, yeah.
Yeah. And I also, not any chance in any world that he's an impact player this year, but Arjun Nimala he's looking pretty good. He's looking like he's going to be a guy. So that's one big name hit in free, you know, in the draft. That's like, oh, okay, this guy's actually, like, you look at him right now and, you know, fingers crossed, no injuries or other weirdness happening. But barring that, it definitely really does look like he has a pathway to the major leagues, as long as that progression keeps going. Cause seeing what I've seen of him so far, he looks really good. For the level that he's at, for the age that he's at. I mean, he's still, what, 19, 20? So he's looking really, really good.
Francisco Lindor thinks he's going to be an MVP one day. So I'll trust Francisco Lindor. Stuff like that. Honorable mentions. I wanted to shout out. I did mention George Springer earlier. He's like the only hitter this spring who actually looks bad, which is not good, depending how he came off of last season. So note that. But we got to mention Bo Bichette. He's got to come back to be that guy that he was a few years ago. Dalton Varsho is hitting the crap out of the home runs this spring.
Yes, he is.
That shoulder, I don't know, man. It's starting to look good every day, I think, is starting to get in there. So if he turns into a 30 home run guy, that could be important. Wanted to mention that too. And then I wanted to also mention Alek Manoah, because he's kind of the forgotten man here. We're not going to get him back until like in the second half of the season. But if you want to look at X factors for the course of the whole season, getting good pitching from motivated and I want to say almost like pissed off Alek Manoah is going to be very good. Yep. So it's a storyline we're going to be monitoring later in the year. But we've talked about the Blue Jays starting pitching depth already. Maybe they just need a guy like Alek Manoah to come in here and give that team a boost when you need it the most. So sure. Just wanted to make sure we mentioned those names.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, if who's a bigger question mark for the back half of the season than Alek Manoah, right? If he comes in, and I know I've talked to you about this before, but Alek seems to pitch his best when he's fired up, when he's really mad, when he's playing with that ferocious emotion that we used to see from like Marcus Stroman, right? Guys like that, they feed off of that energy, right? And a lot of the flat starts that Manoah had were ones where he just looked disengaged. He didn't seem like he wasn't emotional. He was like upset, if you know what I mean, in the difference there, yeah. Where it looked like he was off his game because he wasn't feeling it, as opposed to like, no, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to shove this down your throat and you're going to like it. And at the end of the game, I'm coming off after seven innings with a W, right? We just didn't really see that in a lot of the cases where he was getting hit around. So I would absolutely love if we could get Attitude Manoah back for the second half of the season and then have a couple of games where he absolutely shoves to get his confidence back.
Just a friendly reminder, too, if you don't remember what Alek Manoah did last year, he only made five starts. This first one came in Washington. His line was four innings, seven runs, four walks, gave up two home runs. But I think if you remember, he got into some trouble early, then really settled in. And then I think it was the fourth inning where he gave up a bunch. Then his next two starts, he went seven innings both time, one struck out six, gave up four hits. The next one, no earned runs. He pitched seven shutout against the Tampa Bay Rays, for goodness sake. So that was really good. Then, you know, gave up some hits against the Tigers. And then his next start, he only got five outs against the White Sox, but he struck out three of those five batters before having to leave with injury against the White Sox. So that's what we got from Alek Manoah there. Very, very interesting to hear from him. All right. Those are our X factors for the Toronto Blue Jays this season, guys. We want to hear from you. If you are watching us live, leave a comment on who you think. Holiday Fan 32 already did shout out Dalton Varsho. So shout out to him. We want to make sure that, we like what we're seeing from him this spring. It could be very fun. Absolutely. Yes. I do want to get to some minor news and notes to finish up this episode of what has happened this spring training. And the most notable piece here is that Eric Swanson is going to see a doctor. He got an MRI done on his forearm. And Dave, you never like to see this from pitchers, especially in spring, especially from a guy like Swanson, who the Blue Jays, you could say whether you believe him or not, but they were convinced that Eric Swanson was going to be a very key part to this bullpen. In turn, we have re-signed Dylan Tate to a major league contract, $1.4 million with escalators for innings pitch in there. What's your reaction to all this for Eric Swanson and then the re-signing of Dylan Tate?
Man, it's tough, right? I mean, you never want to see this for any guy because you feel bad for them. It's you know, it's their livelihood and their ability to earn while they still can. And you anytime it's like, oh, I need to see a doctor about my arm, you're like, oh, not great. So I'm wishing the best for him. I hope it's not as serious as you know it could potentially be. And I'm kind of bummed too because I was really hoping for a Swanson resurgence this year. I really was. Because if we get Swanson back and we've got Hoffman firing on all cylinders, we got Jimmy Garcia running firing on all cylinders, Sandlin is pitching well. That's you're starting to get a really good looking bullpen there. And that's something that we just didn't have a lot of last year. And I'd love for us to go back to having that. Right. So
name me your bullpen. Give me your starting, I guess, seven or eight pitchers that'll open up the season in the bullpen for the Blue Jays right now.
That's a really good question. I mean, obviously I think Hoffman, and Garcia and Sandlin, because we've been talking about them a lot.
And Chad Green, too. Like, those are Green.
Yeah, exactly. And then after that, it gets a little murky for me. I'm assuming that at least to start, that Yariel's going to be probably in the bullpen, unless one of these guys doesn't start, like, unless one of the starters is injured coming into the beginning of the season, then probably he's like an opener. Three inning type of situation where he's technically a starter, but I guess looking at it here, Zach Pop, I think, is definitely in that group.
Yeah, and that some people are going to hate that, by the way. Zach Pop has his group of people who don't like this.
I get that he's very divisive, but I mean, looking at the rest of the guys here, it's like, okay, well, who do you trust more than Zach Pop? Tommy Nance, I don't know. I don't think I've seen enough of him to know one way or the other. There were times when I thought he pitched really well last year and said so. And then there were other times where he got absolutely lit up. So it's, I don't know. I need to see more from Tommy Nance before I'm putting him in that spot. And I don't know. Dylan Tate, okay, I guess he's going to be on the roster because he's filling a hole for someone else, but I don't expect him to. I would not necessarily get, like, if everyone's healthy, I don't think that he is one of the guys that you go to, right? So,
because here are the locks, right? It's Yariel Rodriguez, it's Ryan Yarbrough as two of the eight guys.
Yeah.
And it's the four we talked earlier. It's your Hoffman, it's your Green, it's Garcia, it's Sandlin.
Yeah.
Yarbrough is the only lefty of that group. So you probably need another lefty. So that basically gives you Brandon Little in there as your best lefty. And then your choices are, like you said, for this last guy, it's Zach Pop, it's Dylan Tate. Maybe you go with the other lefty, you go like Josh Walker. I think there's a non-zero chance a guy like Richard Lovelady or Mason Fluharty can come up here and wow some people and get a job into camp this spring.
For sure.
The Blue Jays, you know, they, like, Nick Robertson has survived being on the 40-man roster this whole winter so far and looks like he will, so maybe he'll get in there too. It's
so tough. I honestly wouldn't be shocked if that final spot just becomes a rotation. Like, we're just going to bring guys up for a couple of weeks, a week or two at a time. Show me what you've got. And then once a guy sticks, they're just going to stick with that for the time being until he plays his way back out of the lineup. And I'm honestly fine with that because that guy's probably a bulk guy or a guy who's coming in to do cleanup after we're getting our asses kicked. So I'm not really that worried about it. I'm more concerned like the first four or five on that list. Those are the guys that we really need to come through. Cause at the end of the day, like, yeah, is it nice to have eight killers in the bullpen? Absolutely. Do most teams have eight killers in the bullpen? No, absolutely not. Most of them have three to five guys that are absolutely deadly. And then they have three to five guys who are competent. So as long as the guys outside of the big three or four that we talked about through different parts of the episode are competent, I don't really care what the name on the back of the jersey is, as long as they're getting the innings in and they're getting the job done.
One thing worth noting, though, is that when the Blue Jays did sign Dylan Tate here is that I think they've realized, oh, crap, maybe our bullpen isn't as set as we think it should be, and we do need some reinforcements in here. I wonder if a guy like a David Robertson, a Phil Maton, a Craig Kimbrell even, or a Joe Kelly is brought in here to come in and help relieve this middle relief corps. It would be wild, wouldn't it?
That would be wild.
Is, but yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say that would be wild because I've softened on him a little bit, but I used to hate Joe Kelly so much that I would be very, like, again, if I hadn't softened on him a little bit, I would be super conflicted about him, where it's like, okay, go pitch good so I can feel better about you now. Because he just, especially when he was on the Red Sox, he just tortured us, man. Tortured us. I remember an era of time where every time we were playing the Red Sox and Joe Kelly came in, I'm like, well, that's the game right there. We ain't getting a hit off this guy because he just absolutely murders us every time he comes into the game. So whatever, I'll just turn the TV off now. It's fine.
There you go. I just remember with Joe Kelly when he was training for the upcoming season and he's trying to learn a changeup and he missed and he broke a window in his old house.
I remember that too.
So that's my Joe Kelly lore. But turning those back to the Blue Jays here, one minor news came out today, and that's Max Scherzer apparently is dealing with a little bit of a thumb issue. Now, he has dealt with nerve issues in his thumb in the past. He had an MRI. John Schneider says they're not majorly concerned. It's something he's dealt with in years past, but it's not related to the nerve issue he had last season. So that's worth noting. But I also want to say Caleb Joseph, the Blue Jays announcer, was on Blair and Barker today. And he says His understanding is that it is indeed a nerve issue. And whenever you're talking about nerves and a thumb, that scares him. So it would go directly against the John Schneider quote of not being worried. And this Blue Jays staff before, remember, Eric Swanson was supposed to be just shut down for a few days. Ryan Burr was supposed to be back after a little bit. Neither of them have come back, right? So
yeah.
How concerned are we about this Max Scherzer thumb injury, if at all?
I'm more concerned about it than I think I should be. And I think that is only due to the fact that, like you said, this front office has been kind of murky about this stuff in the past, where they seem to undersell what's going on. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, they're out for 4 to 6 weeks. And you're like,
right.
Excuse me? You just told us he was going to be out for a couple of days. You just told us it was, you know? So it's not that I distrust them. It's just I'm worried that they... Like, I don't know if it's a PR thing or if it's just they're genuinely underselling the seriousness of stuff that's going on with the guys, which I really hope isn't the case. But I am slightly more worried about it than I might otherwise be. Again, because if it is genuinely a nerve issue, like Caleb seemed to be suggesting, that's never something that you want to have happen, because if you can't feel your hand, you can't throw a ball very well, or at the very least, yep, you can't throw it as well as you would have otherwise, right? So I'm keeping my fingers crossed for him, but I don't know.
We should get another update tomorrow, so stay tuned for that on Max Scherzer. It's worth noting, we've talked about the Blue Jays pitching depth. We kind of need Max Scherzer to be good, yeah, and effective and on the, yeah, mound this year for the Blue Jays to get there. So that is very important and definitely worth paying attention to as we go going forward. Dave, we got like 3 minutes left in our episode. Did you have any thoughts on this Vlad contract rumors things where Shai Davidi reporting they're only about $50 million apart, which is like it's Miles Straw money and they can't get, yeah, a deal done. And I don't want to dive too into it too much, but do you have a thought, yeah, while we're here?
Not really. I'm kind of of the same opinion as you. I think I've made my feelings about Vlad's contract in the past pretty evident. If I remember correctly, the last time that I was on the show, I was basically screaming at the front office, just sign him right now, because if you, right, let this go, he's going to have the absolute monster of all monster seasons and you're going to have to pay him way more. Right. That's the part I don't really understand. Like, I get it. $500 million is a big old bunch of money. Given the fact that we've seen two MVP potential caliber seasons out of him and a couple that were kind of right. But at the end of the day, if you're going to, like I said before, if this is your franchise player, just pay him. Mm-hmm. Just pay him.
And it's not like the difference is too much anymore, you know?
No.
We have thoughts about how it's going to go, and we've talked about those in the past, but it's like, I agree. I think this was the plan the whole time, to get Vlad to free agency. We'll see how it goes. I guarantee you this will not be the last time we talk about this. The one thing that does irk me a little bit about this, though, Dave, is that today reporters were asking him about it, and he wouldn't talk to the Blue Jays media, yet he's going to talking to the national media about this stuff. That's not the type of thing I love. And for a guy who says, I really don't want this thing to become a distraction, what's going to, yeah, happen if Vlad isn't talking to the media about it? The media is going to start asking his teammates about it. And that's when, yeah, it really does start to become a distraction and a problem. So this is going to be messy all season. Yeah. And you already know, our first visit to Boston, our first visit to Yankee Stadium, our first visit to San Francisco, you already know that they're going to get a bunch of questions. The whole first day is going to be like, yeah, well, let's talk about Vlad and where he wants to spend this winter. And you know those rumors, mm-hmm, are going to come out. So, yeah, it's going to be a long overarching theme for the season all year.
Yeah. And as I recall, same with my point from earlier, I'm pretty sure I said the last time I was on too, that part of the reason that you want to sign him as soon as possible is to avoid it becoming a scene.
Yeah. Bingo. Right.
We don't need any more of this drama around the team. We don't need any more storylines coming out of this. We don't need opposing fans, you know, jeering at him and saying, hey, come sign with the Yankees, come sign with the Red Sox. Right. We didn't need any of that. We could have signed him weeks ago, and then none of this is stuff that we're talking about, but instead we've allowed it to get to this point. So it's like one of two situations. It's either going to be a continuing storyline that hangs over the team, or it, you know, miraculously maybe it isn't, and he has an absolute whale of a season. And then now it's like, oh, well, he wants $600 million. He wants $650 million because he just won MVP or whatever, right? And then you're like, well, I guess we should have signed him for $500. That would have been a nice savings. And that's my, again, that's my fear, is that, like, I want him to do really, really well, and I want him to get paid. But you just should have signed him in the offseason. You really just should have signed him in the offseason.
Should have signed him like 4 years ago. But, you know.
Also that, I mean, dragging this out season by season. But anyway, it is what it is.
Yes, indeed. And we will touch on it a lot more as we get into the season. That'll do it for episode here today, guys. A good conversation on the X Factors and the guys who are make or break our Toronto Blue Jays season. We are 2 weeks away from opening day. Very, very excited for that. So it'll be here before you know it. Next week, we're going to do the fan favorite episode. It's the bold prediction episode, and it's one of the most fun episodes doing all year. So if you guys are watching and you want to include one of your bold predictions into the show, let us know. We'll share it. We'll put it on our show. If you want to send us in a video clip, honestly, of you giving your bold prediction, we will air that as well, and that can be really good. So we are excited for that as we start to get working on those. Dave, any last thoughts before we get out of here today?
I am looking forward to that one. You know me, I love me some spicy takes, so I'm tuning in for that one, definitely.
Perfect. Even better. We hope to see you all there. In the meantime, like the video, subscribe to the channel, all that good stuff. For Dave Fulton, I am Jesse Burrell. Thank you all for watching, and let's go Blue Jays.
Let's go Blue Jays.
Woohoo!